The EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network presents Vatican Insider with Joan Lewis. Each week, Joan Lewis brings you news from inside the Vatican and the Church around the world, as well as interviews and answers to your questions. Now, here's EWTN Rome Bureau Chief, Joan Lewis.
Welcome to Vatican Insider on this first weekend of February. I'll get to the news in a minute, but first I urge you to stay here for the interview segment when I feature part two of my conversation with Marianne Mount, president of CDU, Catholic Distance University. When in Rome not long ago, she had a meeting with officials of the Congregation for Catholic Education who expressed great interest in the idea of distance learning. She should be very pleased, because just Monday a new papal document on pontifical universities came out called Veritatis Gaudium, and notably it said it makes provisions for distance learning, whose possibilities have increased significantly in the last 40 years. Now to the news. Sunday, Pope Francis celebrated Mass at St. Mary Major Basilica to mark the restoration of the beloved Marian icon, Salus Populi Romani, Mary, Protectress of the Roman People. His first visit to this image was the day he was elected Pope, March 13, 2013. And with Sunday, he has now been there 59 times. Salus Populi Romani is estimated to have arrived in the Eternal City from the East as early as the 5th century. It first came to prominence in 597 when Pope St. Gregory the Great had the image carried in procession through Rome during an outbreak of the plague. Pope Francis said in the Basilica, "When we go through difficult times or have problems or worries, Mary is our shield, guarding our faith and protecting us from evil. Where the Madonna is at home, the devil does not enter. Where there is the Mother, disturbance does not prevail, fear does not win." Sunday afternoon, the Pope visited the Basilica of Santa Sofia in Rome and addressed the Ukrainian Greek Catholic community. The visit was in response to an invitation by Ukraine's Greek Catholic Church leader, Archbishop Sviatoslav Shevchuk. "I'm here to tell you," said the Pope, "I'm close to you. I pray that hope may never be extinguished in the hearts of each person, but that the courage to go forward, to always start again, is renewed." Pope Francis said, "I pray to the Prince of Peace to stop weapons." He paid tribute to the martyrs of that nation and praised the women of faith. Monday, in a speech to the Roman Rota, Pope Francis said there is need to develop better means of forming the consciences of the faithful in the Church, especially those preparing for marriage and family life. "How precious and urgent is the pastoral activity of the entire Church for the recovery, safeguarding, and protection of Christian conscience illuminated by gospel values." Christian conscience, he said, assumes a decisive role in choices that couples must make to welcome and build their conjugal union and family according to God's design. This is an annual audience at the inauguration of the judicial year. The Roman Rota handles cases pertaining to marriage and is one of three courts of the Holy See, the other two being the Apostolic Penitentiary and the Apostolic Signatura. Also Monday, the Vatican presented Pope Francis's Apostolic Constitution, Veritatis Gaudium, the Joy of Truth. This revises the norms governing ecclesiastical universities and faculties, that is to say, institutions granting pontifical degrees in fields such as theology, philosophy, and canon law, as well as numerous other disciplines. Prepared by the Congregation for Catholic Education, it updates the previous apostolic constitution, Sapientia Christiana, issued in 1979 in the wake of the Second Vatican Council. There are also guidelines governing relations between ecclesiastical academic institutions and their civil counterparts. Notably, Veritatis Gaudium makes provisions for distance learning, whose possibilities have increased significantly since the publication of Sapientia Christiana. The new constitution also includes regulations concerning migrants and refugees, requiring ecclesiastical institutions to adopt procedures to provide for those who may not possess the required documentation for admittance. Tuesday, the Holy See Press Office issued the following statement. Regarding some recently received information concerning the case of Bishop Juan de la Cruz Barros Madrid, Bishop of Osorno, Chile, the Holy Father has arranged for Archbishop Charles Scicluna, Archbishop of Malta, and president of the college that examines appeals in matters of serious crime, in the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, to go to Santiago de Chile to listen to those who have expressed the will to submit elements in their possession. The Pope had appointed Bishop Barrios in 2015 against the advice of fellow bishops and many lay faithful who said that Barrios had protected sexual abuse clerics, knew of their actions, but did nothing about it. A second press office statement came Tuesday from Director Greg Burke. It was in response to a statement made Monday on his blog by Cardinal Joseph Zen, Bishop Emeritus of Hong Kong, that a Vatican delegation visiting China in December had asked two bishops loyal to Rome from the so-called underground church to step aside to make room for two bishops of the government-controlled Patriotic Church. Burke denied a presumed difference of thought and action between the Holy Father and his collaborators in the Roman Curia on issues relating to China. And he said, "The Pope is in constant contact with his collaborators, in particular in the Secretariat of State, on Chinese issues, and he is informed by them faithfully and in detail on the situation of the Catholic Church in China and on the steps in the dialogue in progress between the Holy See and the People's Republic of China, which he follows with great attention. It is therefore surprising and regrettable that the contrary is affirmed by people in the Church, thus fostering confusion and controversy." Wednesday, at the general audience, Francis continued his catechesis on the Mass, considering the liturgy of the Word. He said, "God speaks to us, and the same Holy Spirit who inspired the sacred Scriptures opens our minds and hearts to that living Word. At the table of God's Word, we find nourishment for our lives as we listen to the Old and New Testaments proclaim the one mystery of Christ and call for our response. Since we do not live by bread alone," said the Pope, "but by every word that comes from the mouth of God, we need to be constantly open to and challenged by that word in our lives as individuals and in our life as a church." He asked that lectors be well prepared and well rehearsed in what they will proclaim. He also asked that none of the liturgy be changed or texts foreign to the liturgy replace it. Friday morning, the Pope addressed a conference studying tackling violence committed in the name of religion. He said, "Violence promoted and carried out in the name of religion can only discredit religion itself. Consequently, such violence must be condemned by all, and especially by genuinely religious persons who know that God is always goodness, love, and compassion, and that in Him there is no room for hatred, resentment, or vengeance." The Pope said the religious person knows that among the greatest blasphemies is to invoke God as the justification for one's own sins and crimes, to invoke Him in order to justify killing, mass murder, enslavement, exploitation in whatever form, oppression and persecution of individuals and entire populations. Moving on to Friday afternoon, we know that Pope Francis celebrated the World Day of Consecrated Life with Mass in St. Peter's Basilica with thousands of religious and members of societies of apostolic life. This celebration coincides with the liturgical feast of the Presentation of the Lord. In 1997, Pope St. John Paul II instituted this feast as a universal day of prayer for consecrated men and women. For pastoral purposes, this celebration in local churches is often moved to the following Sunday. Well, those are the news highlights, but stay here for my conversation with Marianne Mount of CDU Catholic Distance University.
I've always been pro-life, but have never been able to talk about it in the news. And now, not only do I share it internally, but I share it with a global audience.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
If you're currently an EWTN media missionary or just interested in becoming one, we've got some great news. EWTN Media Missionaries has a new and improved website. EWTNmissionaries.com, designed with you in mind. Our new site is loaded with great features and it's easy to navigate. There are so many different ways that you can help EWTN. Join us in sharing the eternal word with the world. Visit EWTNmissionaries.com today.
How about this? Apple TV allows you to instantly stream EWTN to your TV. Get EWTN today. It's easy. All you need is a high-speed internet connection, a TV, and the Apple TV player.
The reason for our hope with Father Larry Richards.
Do you mean to tell me that God's a fool? That to make money, to be good in sports, to be a good golfer, to be good in anything, you're going to have to put hours after hours after hours every day, work really, really hard. And then you're going to lose it all anyway, even if you get to the top of your game. But to go to heaven, the greatest of all gifts, the eternity of eternities, all you got to do is, hey, just try to be a good person. And if you go to church every once in a while, please don't get mad at me. Could you just try? Let me give you a hint. If you want to be a man, then be a man about God. If you want to be a man, then you got to sit there and say that it's going to take me time. And that got to become the most important thing. Because money ain't going to keep you alive forever. Sports ain't going to keep you alive forever. Being healthy ain't going to keep you alive forever. Let me give you a hint. Nothing will keep you alive forever except for God.
Welcome back to Vatican Insider. Here's Joan Lewis.
Welcome back to part two of my interview with Marianne Mount, president of Catholic Distance University, a global Catholic university. As you heard in part one, Marianne spoke at length about the conference she attended in Rome that looked at Catholic fundraising and pilgrimage. But in part two, we will talk exclusively about Catholic Distance University, its goals, mission, courses, the degrees it offers, etc. As its website explains, the Catholic Church has been operating universities for 1,000 years and was involved in education for 1,000 years before that, when John Paul II issued the Apostolic Constitution Ex Corde Ecclesiae in August 1990, he restated the tradition and experience of the Church as it relates to Catholic universities. It is this faith that nourishes and guides the Catholic university and makes it a genuine intellectual community. Catholic Distance University takes Ex Corde Ecclesiae as its guiding light. And now, back to my conversation with Marianne. I want to turn to your work, actually, because CDU, Catholic Distance University, fascinating concept. Tell us about it, how it began, how you got involved.
It started in 1983, and actually the story that was told by the priest who had the idea of starting it, he told the story that Pope Paul VI, Blessed Paul VI, came from a publishing family in Milan, and he knew that the church needed to get involved in media if the church was not going to lose thousands and thousands of people. So he brought together in Rome a group of very influential people, including this Jesuit priest, and he said the church must find ways of using media. So Father went back to the United States, and he engaged the bishop of he was the founding bishop of the Diocese of Arlington. Okay. And he spoke to the bishop. We decided, and I was a student of Father John Hardin, and so Father Hardin had been writing correspondence courses for years for Loyola University in Chicago. They closed in 1982, so this is 1983.
Wow.
And so we decided that we would propose to do a correspondence course for the catechists in the Diocese of Arlington. And Bishop Wells thought it was a wonderful idea. He loved Catholic education. He loved the laity. So in my research, I discovered the National Home Study Council in Washington, which accredited correspondence education. So I called up and I said, I'm a woman from the Diocese of Arlington. Got to speak to someone about correspondence education. And the gentleman on the other end said, well, I'm a Catholic from the Diocese of Arlington. And he said, I've been waiting years for a call from the Catholic Church. He said, we've been accrediting Protestant programs for many, many years.
Wow.
So I said, wonderful. Could you come to a meeting this afternoon at the Chancery in the Diocese of Arlington? Oh, yes, I'd be happy to. So he went to the meeting with Father Hardin and Bishop Welsh. And so Father Hardin's explaining how we're going to do this correspondence course for all the catechists. And so this gentleman, Mike Lambert, said, no, Bishop, you need to do it for the whole country. There is nothing out there for Catholics.
Wow. And thus the little seed was planted.
Yes.
And I'm fascinated by what you were telling us over dinner the other night. I mean, students, I will give them, well, it's cdu.
Yes.
Dot edu.
That's correct.
You have to go visit that site. I spent considerable time after our dinner together with Margaret the other night. And just how it works, there has to be quality control of teachers. There has to be quality control, obviously, of text. And tell us about how you get a degree. If I go on the website and I want to do a study in Bible history, I choose one of your courses on the website, and then what do?
You enroll, and it's very simple to do that. It's click, click, click. And yes, you're right. We are an accredited university, so we have very stringent standards. We're also devoted to the fidelity of the teachings of the church.
Sure.
We have three bishops on our board who have the responsibility of ensuring the Catholic identity and the fidelity to church teaching. If you go to the website and you want to do an academic program, we have six terms a year, so you need to apply for one of those six terms to get started. And if you wanted to do one of our two MA programs, we have what we call a gateway course, because we welcome all people who want to consider doing an MA in theology, which is a challenging program.
Yes.
We want to make sure that a prospective student understands what he or she is getting into, and in fact would be what they would want.
Now, in a degree like that, how would the time differ between physically attending a university where you can go to classes every day, or does the time differ? Is it how often you apply yourself?
No, it does differ. What we call it asynchronous. In other words, the learning is not synchronous with the professor and the students. You're not meeting at the same time.
Okay.
And we do that for a number of reasons. First of all, we have students all over the world, so we're dealing with time zones.
Sure.
We don't want someone in Prague having to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning,
yeah,
right, to access class. So the way it works, generally our classes are 8 weeks or 12 weeks.
Okay.
Each week, at the beginning of the week, you log into your class and you see what the reading assignments are. And of course, there are textbooks that you need to purchase, or you can, you know, we have e-books and that sort of thing. So you'll have reading assignments, and you will also have a discussion topic. Your professor is going to post a reflective question based on the readings and the lecture. And the lecture may be video, the lecture may be text. Depends
on
it. And all lectures are audio as well as video and text, because the human ear is very, it's important to hear the voice of someone that you are.
And I'm going to remember more having heard a voice than necessarily having read something.
That is correct. And in online education, the goal is to create presence. Mm-hmm. We want to feel the reality of the professor who's there with me, who cares for me, who's working with me, and presence of all the other students. So the human voice helps to create that presence.
Yeah.
The video is very helpful.
Sure.
The students who enroll in the class generally will upload a photo. So every time a student makes a comment, you see the photo.
Oh, lovely. Oh, so there is a class-like,
absolutely,
a classroom-like feeling.
We work very hard at that. And at the beginning of every class, we do introductions. So you'll see the introduction from your professor, and the professor will give you background about his or her life. And then each student is invited to introduce his or herself, tell a little bit about yourself. So
Can you become friends and interact with another student?
Oh, my goodness. We have graduates who create, you know, who've established friendships around the world. And
lovely.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they're lifelong friendships. Yeah.
Now, that is so amazing. And how many students do you have? I mean, is there a number any one time
it fluctuates, but in general, we have about 1,000 students studying at a time. We have about 300 students doing academic theology programs.
Wow.
And then the majority are doing non-credit courses. And our non-credit courses are on an Amazon platform. So it's very simple. You just click, put your credit card in.
Okay.
It's like buying something on Amazon.
Sure.
Bingo, you're right into your class. Maybe you're studying one of the Vatican documents.
Sure.
And it's all automated. So you have automated testing. And then if you need help or you have questions, you can do that. You have access to a faculty member.
Oh, that is so wonderful to know. And again, you have to go to the website. I just found it absolutely intriguing. cdu.edu. Just as an afterthought, it occurred to me that there might be a difficult transition period. I was a teacher once, but in a classroom, transitioning to something like a distance university learning. And you had an interesting little saying for that.
Yes, we say that in online education, you want professors who are no longer the sage on the stage, but the guide on the side. We select faculty very carefully. We educate them to be the guide on the side. And in an online classroom, you have access to the whole class, but you can also email a particular student individually,
sure.
and the student can do that to you as well. So if a student is not really grasping, perhaps, a concept,
right.
the student can privately email the professor. Or if a student has made a remark in the discussion that is a little bit off, the professor can do that.
Wonderful.
And a really good professor knows how to facilitate the weekly conversation because the students are graded in the quality of their,
sure.
their, contributions.
And I think you probably do have to bring, not probably, you do have to bring that personal touch that you'll have in the classroom where you're actually looking at all these people in the eye. You have to bring a personal touch, though, and relate to people in a long-distance fashion. So,
absolutely.
But,
it's a special gift.
Yeah, it really does. Well, thank you for adding that. I like that sage on the stage to guide on the side. I want to move on to something so fascinating. You brought this up the other night because you had met someone at the Congregation for Education who was fascinated by, so what's Catholic Distance University? And they asked you to come and tell them about it. So reflect on that visit for me.
Yes, it was actually, it was very inspiring for me as well. I met with Archbishop Zani, and I also met with the English secretary to Archbishop Zani, Monsignor Boyle, and they were very fascinated at the concept of an online university, and they knew some of our faculty, and they knew that what we are doing is very serious, challenging
sure.
theological education, because there is such a growth in online education, and in fact, the church as well wants to be part of the culture today. They invited me to come back to talk about how we conduct online education because they're dealing with that now as well.
Well, and I think you said earlier, we were talking before we started taping this, that one of their main concerns, and it should be for a Vatican body, is the absolute quality control
yes.
of both if they engage online teachers and obviously the topics that if they're going to teach straight from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, that's okay. But then if there's other texts, those would have to be approved. They would have to meet all the standards and teaching of the magisterium. And then if you've got, even around the globe, you're going to have Asian, African, Latin America, different fields of knowledge, different people teaching maybe the theology of the body, but like who's the best in Spanish, who's the best in English, because they have to think of different languages too, don't they, in the Vatican?
They do, and the fascinating, to me anyway, the fascinating part of our conversation was the Archbishop's focus on pedagogy and a recognition that teaching online is not the same as teaching in a classroom, and he really, really drilled down on that topic. He also wanted to know, how do we develop a rapport with the faculty? And, you know, how do we have a sense of commitment on the part of the faculty
sure.
together? And how do we bring them together since they're geographically dispersed?
Oh, yeah.
He asked extremely good questions. And so wonderful. It was very gratifying for me to have the opportunity to talk about the pedagogy and the differences.
You'll probably be back someday to expand on that with them. I mean, I'm thinking, you know how many pontifical universities are here in Rome. And that may be where the Congregation for Education was going. Instead of coming to Rome to get a missionary degree at the Urbaniana or a degree in canon law at the Thomas Aquinas, you know, yes. the Angelicum, if this could be done online, especially for people who might not be able to afford to come to Rome, live in Rome, pay room and board, etc. Did you get the feeling it sounded like something exciting down the line for them?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, at the end of our meeting today, they said, please stay in touch with us because we want to be able to learn from you. We want to know what you're doing. And we need this this education because we don't have a lot of experience with it.
Sure.
And I also had a wonderful meeting at the Dicastery of Laity, Family, and Life.
Oh.
The priest that I met with said that this is so worthwhile for families because they're very busy. They've got so many responsibilities.
Exactly.
They don't want to be away from their families.
Exactly.
So this is a way.
That was Father Mello,
Yes, Father Mello. Okay. Right,
great.
Right.
I just find it so exciting, and the fact that the church is so excited about something like this, because if you look at the Vatican, I've been here so many years,
yes.
if you look at the growth in social media and just, you know, the internet is not even 3 decades old. If you look at the growth in it, a lot of it's been in communications. We aren't necessarily thinking of a lot of these online possibilities for some of the Vatican offices. So it sounds like you've stimulated a few people, and what I should have said halfway through this conversation, and I've been talking with Marianne Mount. She's the president of Catholic Distance University. And so her pilgrimage here to Rome to participate in a fundraising conference, and then how she got Vatican officials interested in Catholic distance learning. So, Marianne, thank you for your time, because I know you've had a lot of requests for your time, but thanks for being here for us.
Oh, I'm delighted to be with you, Joan, and thank you so much for inviting me.
Well, we're going to talk about this again. We're going to follow up and see what the congregation does, okay? And on
Thank
that
you.
Note, we close this edition of Vatican Insider. Well, that's it for today, but please come back and join me again next week on Vatican Insider.